permit renewal. California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Fish Springs, Fish Factory, New York, Council.
Jay Castle, our secretary, presenting here on behalf of the IPA department. These are health and wellness, this is the first IPA report, I think. So, I say aye.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Jahiel Cass. I am a civil engineering director of office presenting item six, which is a permit renewal for the Fish Springs Fish Hatchery. It's a federal NPDES permit renewal. There is a late revision for this item that I will discuss. And as I go through it at the end of the presentation, I'll let you know the items in that pink sheet state. The outline for my presentation is to discuss the site location, where it's located, a little bit about briefly the hatchery operations, a small snippet of the compliance history since this permit was last adopted in 2006, and then the comments that we have received from the landowner, the City of Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and the operator, which is the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And then I'll discuss changes from the previous permit that we've made into this version, and then make a recommendation for your consideration. So the main issues are, first of all, should the board adopt a revised NPDES permit, the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit for the hatchery, which was last done in 2006. And then the other issue that has been raised by the landowner is the should the water board name the landowner, which is the City of Los Angeles, as a discharger, which in this case staff is recommending only for a very small focus, limited issue. I will talk briefly about the general location. I know the way the screens are set up here is a little difficult for the board to see, but the general location slides, the hatchery is located in Owens Valley, south of Bishop, north of Owens Lake. That's the one highway 395. There are a couple slides that I will speak a little more detail on, but not these general location slides. This next slide is the hatchery location in the Owens Valley. Owens River flowing from north to south on the east side of the valley. I want to point out it has water quality objectives that are defined in the basin plan for selected parameters. The hatchery shown on this slide at the upper left discharges, and the discharge from the hatchery forms the headwaters of Fish Springs Creek, which flows into the Owens River. And we'll be talking about Fish Springs Creek in a little more detail later. The land, as I said, is owned by the City of Los Angeles. The hatchery operations are by the State of California. And Fish Springs, which formerly supplied the hatchery, are now dry. And so new groundwater supply wells were installed to supply hatchery operations. Those wells, as I understand it, are owned by the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, operated by the City of Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. The facility itself is a flow-through operation. These wells provide somewhere between 8 and 26 million gallons per day of water flowing through six raceways that support fish growth. That water is then discharged to Fish Springs Creek. The hatchery produces somewhere about a million pound of fish per year in a normal operation. It's variable, and they grow different kinds of fish, trout, primarily their trout species. This is the slide I'll talk to a little bit more detail. This is the one that's called Hatchery Operations. It's in color. It basically shows what we know about the site. So I'm going to use the pointer here, and up in the upper left is the former fish springs, which have now dried up. Right beneath them are the two wells that were installed to supply water, and the raceways are these long concrete troughs that run down here. Once water gets to the end of the raceway, then it's sent through a pipeline over to the Serpentine Channel, which is a settling pond. The settling pond is the major treatment that the facility has, because sediment is where you're going to remove excess solids that have been put in the water through excess fish feed or fish excrement. That's where the nutrients are primarily being removed. The effluent from the settling pond comes to this location, effluent 001, and then it flows, and this is Fish Springs Creek, then flows down to the Owens River. There was another previous effluent monitoring station, effluent 002, where some water was diverted into an incubation house, then it went down this little channel to the back and discharged, but that facility is no longer used. So in the permit, we've removed the effluent discharge location 002. And there's only one discharge location, 001. In this location, where the hatchery effluent discharge forms a little pool, there's also another Department of Water and Power well to the south of the hatchery that discharges through a unlined canal in that same vicinity from the south. And slightly to the east, the Big Pine Canal, which also carries diverted water from streams and possibly some other pumped well water from water and power wells into the Big Pine Canal, which is used for irrigation. I think it starts, you know, a few miles to the north, but it terminates at this location. So what we have here is the receiving water monitoring. And formerly it was in a little pool that was right beneath the discharge of the hatchery. We call the receiving water monitoring station R001. But essentially that was the same as the effluent, and it was like, what does that really tell us? And comparing the data in the receiving water to the current basin plan objectives was a little difficult. So we're proposing in this permit to add a new receiving water monitoring station at the Highway 395 bridge. So the longest run of the Fish Springs Creek could be evaluated based upon the influent from the hatchery operations, the Big Pine Canal, and this little canal to the south. And then there are no other inputs into Fish Springs Creek except maybe, you know, incidental runoff from land overflow down toward the river. This permit was last revised in 2006, and an NPDES federal permit renewal is supposed to be every 5 years. We started that approach in 2011. We got stuck, and US EPA said, and I don't recall the full detail, but basically what you need to do is you need to go back and adopt some site-specific objectives for the receiving water body of concern, which is Fish Springs Creek. Because now our basin plan only has receiving water objectives for the Owens River from Tinema up to Bishop. And this tributary, which by the tributary rule would apply that objective, has no unique objectives. And EPA believed that we should have some site-specific objectives for Fish Springs Creek itself, which we don't have in the basin plan currently. So this year, after some discussion with the EPA on the approach, we issued a revised tentative permit. And we're putting forward this permit now that would provide for data collection over the next 5 years, that then future basin plan water quality objectives could be calculated in the future. So what I'd like to do is discuss the main comments that we've received from the City of Los Angeles and how we've addressed them in this permit. The City of Los Angeles essentially does not want to be named as a discharger in the order in any fashion. What we've done in this current proposed order, we've limited their role or their requirement as a discharger to supplying some information about those wells that are pumped to supply fishery water, which are turned off periodically, usually in the fall when operations are low and the hatchery is able to turn off one well without affecting fish production, and then they can turn off another well for an annual inspection. It doesn't happen every year, but generally every year. That's also where the flow meter is. It's a little mechanical impeller, spinning type flow meter that can be evaluated, and that can be the monitoring program in this permit does require that flow data be provided. There was some contention about who would provide that data. Well, evidently, the Department of Fish and Wildlife was able to go over to the flow meter, look at it, and get the data, but the calibration or the annual inspection is done by the Department of Water and Power. So that is the only thing that we've asked the Water and Power to provide Fish and Wildlife on a periodic basis. They're named as a discharger for that limited role. The Department of Fish and Wildlife has made some comments to that we went back and forth and addressed. One of them is to remove the constituent orthophosphate, which is a nutrient, because they said we don't add it. We looked at the data that was supplied, provided by the department over the last 5 years, last permit cycle, and we agreed that there is no reasonable potential for orthophosphate to exceed the receiving water objective that is in the basin plan. And because of that, this permit removes orthophosphate. They also requested to remove the constituent potassium permanganate from having an effluent limit. We looked at the data. There was a situation that occurred in the last permit cycle that led us to believe there is a reasonable potential to exceed an effluent limit, so that's why we retained the limit. We calculated the limit based upon the state's implementation policy, and that's the reason the limit was retained. That can be reevaluated every permit cycle. They also commented regarding the supply wells, that they don't control them. So as I mentioned, this order limits the Department of Water and Power's role is to provide the fish and wildlife with information on their annual inspections of the pump wells. Fish and Wildlife has also indicated that at that new receiving water location, our 002 down the Highway 395 bridge, they understand that receiving water monitoring is part of an NPDES permit, but they do not want to sample the inorganics in the receiving water, boron, fluoride, chloride, or sulfate. They just believe they don't add those constituents, and they do not want to monitor for those constituents. This permit does include those constituents in the permit, and staff believes it's appropriate to monitor those for a couple of reasons. We do have receiving water objectives for those constituents. We do understand the need, that we have a need to reevaluate or calculate new site-specific objectives in Fish Springs Creek for those constituents. And if we did not monitor the receiving water, we would probably have to go back and evaluate the effluent, which we're not requiring now in this proposed order for these four constituents, or also potentially go back and also monitor the supply wells to see, you know, what's being contributed from the groundwater, because these are naturally occurring constituents. What is being contributed depending by the hatchery, and then what is the effect on the receiving water? So, frankly, Steph believes this is the most cost-effective way to get data to establish future objectives. So now I'd like to summarize the major changes from the previous permit. As I mentioned, we removed an effluent limit for orthophosphate. We've also removed an effluent limit for copper, because previously the hatchery used copper weir plates to control certain fish health indicators, and they removed those some time ago. So copper is also not a constituent that we believe there's a reasonable potential. There's no reasonable potential for copper to cause an effluent limit violation or receive water violation. This permit does allow intake credits. This is one of the things we discussed with US EPA, which is kind of new, because nitrate and total dissolved solids are present in the groundwater as natural constituents. There's been some increases over time. The Department of Fish and Wildlife did not want to be responsible for causing for exceeding an effluent limit for a parameter that was naturally occurring. So this permit establishes a limit, a maximum limit, and as long as they're under the limit, there is no issue. But if, in fact, the receiving water were to exceed the effluent limit, then the effluent could not exceed the receiving input water concentration. In other words, the hatchery could not add any additional mass of nitrate, total nitrogen, or TDS, so they would be held to what's in that. So as the drought continues, as groundwater level can drop, you know, we have seen some indication that the naturally occurring concentration of the constituents are going up a little bit. So this is how we've allowed the hatchery to essentially pass through what comes in the receiving water. So they're not responsible for that. I mentioned the new receiving water monitoring station at R002. And the other issue is, that's a change in the previous permit, is this limited liability rule for the Department of Water and Power to be named as a discharger. With that, I guess I'm ready to make a recommendation, but I would also like to point back to the late change order, the late revision sheet that passed out, the pink item. There's really one change that's made twice, and the first thing I would have to say is that you've probably seen that already. There is a problem in this order in that this is a very long Word document, and when we translated it into the agenda packages, we lost the headers and footers, which for a long NPDES permit with many different sections, it's very almost necessary for navigating through it, and we apologize for that. But the last item on the late revision item is to authorize us in the motion to adopt, if you go that far, to reinsert the right headers and footers. That's on page 2 of the late revision. Throughout the document, we'd like to insert those. So what I'll have to do is I'm going to refer to date numbers in the permit for the other items to be that. So on date page 6-7, that's really page 1 of the permit, and there's a table. And that table lists the discharger, and it says the state of California is a discharger, primary discharger, owner of the facility and operator. And it also says City of Los Angeles for the limited purpose of monitoring flow from its pumps, but as we've with further discussion with both parties, found out that no, Water, Fish and Wildlife monitors flow. Water and Power just evaluates the pumps and monitors or tests or verifies the flow meters operate. So this late revision item just recommends some changes to clarify Department of Water and Power's role to the purpose of inspecting supply well pumps and flow measuring equipment. And so that change would be made both on page 6-7 and also in the fact sheet, which is a repetition of that table on date page 6-62. The other item is item B on the first page of the late revision. This is in the monitoring program, right? So this is really where the only requirement for the Department of Water and Power to provide some information to the wildlife is found. And in this attachment E, monitoring programs, a change to item B, which would delete the first sentence, because the Water and Power is not monitoring flow, and then to the end of the paragraph, clarify that the Department of Water and Power must provide Fish and Wildlife with relevant information regarding its supply of pumps and flow measuring equipment. And those are the only changes to the order that staff is proposing. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions from the board.
Are there any questions for staff?
Jake, can I ask you a question about your slide number 8?
Yes, sir.
I believe that you indicated that the new receiving water station is RW002.
Yes.
And where was the previous receiving station?
It was right where the station the effluent 001. In other words, on this slide, you can see the serpentine channel. The water flows into the south channel, flows around into the north. There's an overflow weir. Is it right here? This location is an overflow weir. The water from the channel dumps into this little mixing pool. And it was basically at that same location, right in the mixing pool. We said, oh, that's the receiving water monitoring. But there really was no difference between the effluent and the receiving water in the pool, except that it had been spinning around for a few minutes longer than the water that just dumped over the weir.
Well, where is the effluent water quality?
That would be right at the weir overflow.
Okay. So no change?
No change in the location that effluent is measured.
Okay, thank you.
I think I need maybe yes on one. What is the purpose of the receiving water monitoring station? Why are we gathering that information?
The receiving water is the resource that the permit is. Let me rephrase that. The receiving water is the resource that we are trying to protect through the permits we issue. So the whole intent of this permit, whether it's a registration requirement or a federal NPDES permit, is to protect that receiving water. So we're measuring or monitoring the receiving water to determine if the discharge has adversely affected the receiving water or caused the receiving water to exceed objectives that are appropriate for the receiving water.
Okay, so the receiving water at this point is simply this, the combination of the water from the fish hatchery plus whatever comes down being run down.
Yes, with a minor contribution from this well. It's shown off the map, but it flows into a little canal that discharges, that called the canal well discharge.
So, what is there any possibility of pollutants coming down the canal?
Yes, and that's why it felt appropriate if we're going to reconsider, or actually consider for the first time, American water quality objectives for Fish Springs Creek as a whole. We should consider where is the best location so that we have all sources considered. So that's why going downstream of that location seems more appropriate, because a receiving water objective essentially is your ambient water quality. But it's the standard that's set to protect that ambient water quality and give you site-specific objectives.
I'm just sort of confused. I mean, if there are pollutants coming down the canal, then where this monitoring station is not, it's already affected by human activity.
Well, let me rephrase that. When I said pollutants, I mean, it does carry water.
Yeah.
It's been pumped from groundwater. It's been diverted from streams flowing out of the Sierras. I don't know. It may have water from a tiny bit of urban runoff from Big Pine. It might carry a little yard runoff. You know, so there's probably some nutrients in there. In other words, there's not, that we're aware of, any direct discharges into the Big Pine canal. But it carries water from the Owens Valley. They might use it for irrigating some agricultural land, some grazing pasture land, maybe some farmland, or maybe some, you know, minor amounts of nutrients and or chemicals, just like, you know, there could be from runoff from the highway at 395. So I'm going to back up, if I may, to the slide that is the previous slide. This is slide 5 that shows where you have the hatchery up here, but this stretch of Big Springs Creek is we're going to establish a numerical value that represents the creek as a whole. We probably want to include those discharges we're aware of, and you see there's even some ag land to the south. Probably will have negligible impact on the creek itself, but at this location, we felt was the location where you would basically have the best ambient water quality for that water body.
Maybe I can contribute and just add a little. My name is Lori Kemper, Assistant Executive Officer for the Lawton Board. I just want to remind the board that, as Jay has already explained, that the basin plan currently has site-specific objectives on the Owens River at the entrance to Tinnamaha Reservoir, or is this
the entire stretch of the river between Bishop and Tinnamaha River?
But I mean, so when you open up our basin plan, there are site-specific objectives, and it says those objectives are set at Tinnamaha Reservoir, and they apply upstream to all the waters upstream of Tinnamaha Reservoir all the way to Bishop. So the numeric standards apply up Fish Springs Creek right now, and they apply, you know, up Big Pine Canal and that kind of thing. Obviously, that station was set. That's where samples were collected in the 40s and 50s, and we set numeric objectives based on that water quality. The challenge we have now is the water quality of Tinnamaha is not the same water quality as Fish Springs Creek. Probably never was. Our basin plan has numeric objectives that were set for fish springs, the actual springs that are now dry. And those site-specific objectives were set for the spring itself and the upstream. So we kind of have this gap in our basin plan where we don't have really numeric objectives that are relevant in the setting. So that's why we're trying to establish a new station at 395, which happens to be convenient. I mean, as a basin planner, you would set your objectives probably at the bottom of Fish Springs Creek before it enters Owens River, and you would apply it all the way for the whole length of Fish Springs Creek. That would make the most sense. That's difficult access to get there. So we're saying we're just going to do it at 395 and apply those numbers upstream. So that's why we want all the inputs at that point. And as Jay said, it's mostly natural water. It's just, when you ask the question, does it contain pollutants? Well, yeah, you know, the minerals coming out of the ground are conceivably pollutants, because LA is pumping groundwater that may not have previously reached surface water in the past. So it is confusing. It's not easy to try to, to figure out. And obviously, we're primarily relying on the effluent data that Fish and Wildlife collects to make sure, so that we understand what they're discharging, but then we're trying to see what is the effect on the water just downstream of the hatchery, and what is the effect of their effluent on that water to make sure that it's protected from all of that fish species.
I did have a question on your slide number 11.
Yes.
Your fourth bullet point, you had stated that there was an objection to doing this monitoring. Who was objecting?
This was the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who stated to us that for their operation, as all state operations are, finances are tight and short, and they believe that it's not typical or not normal for Fish and Wildlife to monitor receiving water to provide data to the water board to establish objectives if that's not a pollutant in their discharge. But as Lori indicated, it's a natural constituent. It is contained in the discharge. They may or may not be adding boron, fluoride, sulfate, and chloride, but it's certainly present in their discharge, so that's why we felt it was appropriate to include it as a monitoring a constituent in the receiving water.
Are there any funding that we have to maybe assist in the cost of that or not?
I can't speak to that. I mean, staff, we do have a laboratory budget, and we do have staff that does collect field samples, but in terms of sharing that, I mean, that would have to be a management decision as we look at all the things that we're sampling for.
We traditionally don't have money for agencies like that, but we certainly can work with Fish and Wildlife and find us to be assisting in getting funding for Fish and Wildlife and things like that.
I mean, we just did a rough calculation on the cost, just so you understand. Our laboratory contract for these four constituents is $8 per analysis, because they may have to go to a laboratory without a contract. It may be higher, maybe double, maybe. But still, let's say it's at $20 per analysis times four analyzed times four times per year times what we're looking at, a five-year permit. So it's not a significant amount of money.
Does that help to any other comments? Or seeing that, there's We have Terry Jackson from California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you, Board. Appreciate time to stand before you, and I'll try and clarify some things as well. Again, my name is Terry Jackson. I do work for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, previously Department of Fish and Game. And my role is I'm the statewide hatchery MPDS coordinator. So I coordinate all hatcheries, which is roughly 20 permits throughout the state. So I deal with not only the Lamont Board, but as well with the Central Valley and the North Coast Board. So I am constantly negotiating, you know, looking at all these things and trying to make sure that the things are as comparable from board to board, and that, which is what came up with the receiving water issue, is it's not so much that it's a big dollar amount for this specific facility, but when you multiply it out, say if we were to set precedence and do that for 20 facilities, it could easily add up to, in our case, we figured the math out over 5 years would be about $3,000, but if you were to do that times 20, that's $60,000, and so we just were concerned about that. We actually, in an effort of collaboration with the board, our hatchery staff, since we're already going to be out collecting receiving water data anyway for nitrates and TDS, et cetera, we would be willing to collect those samples that are necessary for the board to establish those limits. It's just that it's the cost of paying for it. So what we were asking is that we would collect those samples, the hatchery staff would collect those samples on a quarterly basis. And we were hoping that the board, or however that would work out, would be willing to help us financially with processing those. We would send those to the lab, and as long as that's not coming out of our budget that we're already dealing with, that would be appreciated. That's what we're hoping for. So I also want to thank that this has gone on for a while. Originally, when we met Lori Kemper, we worked with, and that was how we came to kind of an impasse. Part of the situation is we identified that the water coming from the supply wells was in excess of the basin plan objectives. We had nitrates and TDSs that were higher than the level, and our facility does operate quite clean. The settling ponds operate very efficiently, in that even though the nitrates came out of the ground above level, they did leave the facility above level, but usually were actually lower than the supply. So because of the way the earthen situation, and it's more like a creek where a lot of plant life and everything, it absorbs some of that nitrate for its own growth. And so we did actually improve it, even though that's not the purpose of the facility. Obviously, we're not a water treatment plant, but we did that. So, and the other part of our concern with the receiving water itself is, like I said, there's a well that comes in from the south that we don't know anything about, and of course, Big Pine Canal definitely does have it. I did a flyover with our wardens to kind of get an idea of what this looked like, so we flew the valley, and you know, when you see, you know, lots of cattle standing in Big Pine Canal doing what they do, our concern is that we are put. Burden is being put on to us to look at the receiving water, you know, objectives, and yet there's no information specifically on Big Pine, and there's no information. So I suspect the groundwater coming from the unknown well likely is above limits as well. So that's really all I have to say. We really appreciate how the board, JCAS, has been tremendous. We've negotiated through, and we do agree with everything that's in the permit, minus who's responsible for paying for receiving water data. I do believe it's important that we collect that data. I do believe it's important that we establish specific objectives. The wells were put in before the springs ever dried up. The springs now being dry, it did all of a sudden raise a question as to whether or not what the objectives were set were necessary. So anyway, the department is very pleased with the permit line, the obligation of paying for the receiving water samples, the extra samples. Thank you very much. If you have any questions,
Mr. Jackson. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
some, you know, further discussion between management. But one option that we've just thought about is if Department of Fish and Wildlife would collect the samples for the inorganics, ship it to our contract lab, then the Water Board could pay for that analysis. And you know, that involves just staff collection costs, in time for your staff to collect. And then, depending on the amount of data that we really want to get to actually calculate site-specific objectives, you know, we could actually maybe go to more frequent analysis. We would pay for the inorganics, but obviously the details would have to be worked out.
We want to get offline on some creative solutions to see if we can get help out.
I think that's a great compromise. Thank you for that.
We have some modified permits for that.
I would say no, in that the permit would have the essential data collected for compliance. If we want additional samples above and beyond the permit, that's no problem there. We would be able to have the data in-house for calculating the site-specific objectives, and then, of course, we would share that data with the Department of Fish and Wildlife so they get essentially reported back to us as part of the permit compliance.
Okay. So I'm sure. Any other questions for staff before the board?
Dr. Horn, if I can explain part of that for you. So for the receiving water limit, there isn't a penalty that's associated with it as there is for effluent limit. The receiving water limit basically lets you know how that water body is doing in general. So it's the accumulation of all of those discharges together. And we want that receiving water limit to be what we have in our basin plan. So sometimes, for example, when we give people permits, we won't give them the full capacity of, you know, being able to discharge to 10, because that's the receiving water limit, because we have other dischargers. So we want to make sure that all of those discharges that are happening together equal what we want that water body to look like. So it's the bigger picture. But no one in general is held to that standard. We don't issue penalties necessarily for that, but it is what may help determine our 303 D list or.
Let me try. So basically, what we're saying, what the water is at that point is our baseline. It's establishing our baseline, and then the number is then used for setting limits for any future activities that might.
It could, yeah.
Dr. Horn, you're correct in that we normally, we would not, as part of setting a new receiving water limit or a site-specific objective, a receiving water limit is the word we use when we put it in a permit, and we do hold them accountable to meeting that receiving water limit if we can show that their discharge caused the excursion above that receiving water limit, and there is not minimum mandatory penalties, but as the chief of the prosecution team, I can tell you there are discretionary penalties that can be imposed for violating the receiving water limit. So I want to be clear that receiving water limits are enforceable. They go in permits, and they are used to hold people accountable to making sure the resource is protected. So we do that. We had envisioned and we had believed up until today in terms of understanding the water at that point at the highway, and I knew there was different wells that supplied water there. So we were trying to set a number that did represent what we considered background, not influenced by cow manure, okay, because we thought that water was mostly coming from pump wells in the valley. And so we were trying to set a new surface water standard that represented the actual water quality being pumped out of the valley that's now in the creek. We are going to have, before we set a numeric standard at the highway, if we believe there's inputs from cow manure or other sources upstream from Big Pine Canal, we may have to do additional analysis. We wouldn't hold Department of Fish and Wildlife responsible for that. We'd either find money ourselves or we'd find other responsible parties to help with that project. And we have to go through an analysis to say what's reasonably achievable. So we can't set a number based on the fact that there is cow manure, if there is cow manure, you know, in that creek. That isn't the number we would pick. So this is very similar to the discussion we've had with Mr. Bill Thomas and the Bridgeport Ranchers, that it's just not that easy to just pick a number or to base the number on the current condition if we think there are reasonable control measures that can be in place to improve that water quality. Now, we believe that's the case if it's associated with Department of Fish and Wildlife's fishery operations, because we have a lot of data on their effluent. We don't have as much data on Big Pine Canal. So that's part of the effort. This is just one little piece that Fish and Wildlife is helping contribute to a bigger effort.
Thank you.
In the permit of Bay Page 6-16, that's where, Table 6, that's where the numerical limits that Ms. Kipper referred to that apply in the Mullins River above Tinnamaha, but also apply to Fish Springs Creek currently. These are the numbers here that we would be essentially proposing to reconsider for this unique stretch based on the data.
Right. Thank you. So we now have an item before us to consider adopting the renewal of the NPDES permit for Fish Springs Hatchery. What is the pleasure of the board?
I make a motion that we adopt the order as proposed.
With my provisions?
With the legal
provisions. I'm sorry, with the legal provisions.
So that is
the one.
Yeah, that's part of the legal provisions.
Second.
First,
okay. Kimberly Cox?
Aye.
Amy Horn?
Aye.
Don Jardine?
Aye.
Eric Sandell?
Aye.
Carries.